Welcome to the Geeks of the Valley podcast, your gateway to insightful conversations with the brightest minds shaping today's industries on a global scale. Join us as we delve into the hottest upcoming trends and explore how their work is influencing the global economy. Our podcast focuses on four distinct industry sectors, bringing you discussions from the forefront of venture capital and private equity, innovative minds, entrepreneurship, and policy and multilaterals. What initially began as a casual coffee chat has now evolved into a thriving global platform for visionaries, where ideas are shared and connections are made. We genuinely value your input and eagerly await your suggestions for future guests. If there's a particular individual you're eager to hear from, don't hesitate to reach out to us at geeks@geeksofthevalley.com. Tune in and join us on this exciting journey of knowledge, inspiration, and innovation. Welcome to an exciting episode of our program. Today, we have a very special guest joining us. It's the first installment of our policy and multilaterals segment. And we are thrilled to have Joby Bernstein with us. Joby is a dynamic candidate who is running for Congress in California's 16th district. Joby's background in investing, science, and activism shines through his notable work at Wasatch Global Investors. There he delved into research on clean tech, med tech, and fintech industries. Prior to that, he served as a portfolio manager associate for Dodge & Cox International Fund. But Joby's achievements extend beyond his professional endeavors. He graduated with flying colors, attaining summa cum laude and Phi Beta Kappa honors as an economic major at Dartmouth College. Not only that, he pursued double minors in public policy and environmental science, while also excelling in various leadership roles. Joby has consistently demonstrated his commitment to both personal growth and community engagement. Throughout this episode, Joby will be sharing his motivation to represent the voices and dreams of the people in his district. He will also outline his vision for a more inclusive America and a prosperous Silicon Valley. Joby, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
And how are things with you over there in California?
They're busy, to say the least, but going very well. Whole campaign is in motion and things are humming along. It is wild to watch basically a whole company get start up in a few weeks. Got an 8-person team now, but it is a fantastic team. And we are racing to the final sprint of the 45 days until the primary.
Fantastic. And I'm really, really excited to hear that. Let's jump into the first question here, shall we?
Perfect.
So, Joby, can you tell us more about the specific district you're running for? We know it's around the 16th district, and I guess the key issues and challenges that it faces today.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like no one, unless you're some random political wonk like me, no one should have any clue what the California's 16th district actually represents. It's basically Silicon Valley. The area was redistricted 2 years ago, but it sort of starts up in Pacifica, just south of San Francisco, and goes all the way down to cover a third of San Jose. So the heart of Silicon Valley, towns like Palo Alto, Mountain View, Menlo Park, but also stretches to the coast, including anything from Moss Beach to Half Moon Bay. It is a dynamic district, to say the least. You have some of the most wealthy zip codes in the country here, and also some zip codes that have been consistently disadvantaged, lack access, of consistent access to power, lack of investment along the coast, high foreign-born share of immigrants. And really offers a dynamic district for someone who also loves the outdoors. It is a beautiful place. Biking on Skyline Boulevard is probably one of the prettiest cycling roads in the country. You have amazing surfing on the coast, great hiking in Wonderlic and Rostradero, access to the bay and the ocean. So it's really a beautiful district that is an amazing place to live. I wasn't lucky enough to be born here, but it is my chosen home. And just an amazing community. It does come with its challenges, similar, to the Bay Area. As I have polled voters, the top three that have come up have been climate change, education, and immigration, but also following that, housing and infrastructure, especially in the Bay Area, where there are restrictions on housing codes, where there have been some NIMBYism and other issues that have occurred around infrastructure. It is definitely falls in line with other Bay Area and California issues that we've been seeing, but it's also a district that has seen a lot of progress. So people care about climate change here because a lot of people are actually part of the climate movement. We have some of the most climate startups in the country, the best climate researchers, my favorite climate activists. And so it's really a district that should be able to flex, you know, what Silicon Valley does here is really a model for the rest of the country to look at, because we've really have, you know, some of the most exciting innovation in technology has all been born here. And so it's a district that has its challenges, but also continues to reinvent America at the same time.
And with the election only 45 days away, what are the main messages you want to convey to voters in your district?
Yeah, I think it's time for the next generation, and it's time for younger generations to have a voice in DC. Today, the average age of a senator in the Senate is 65 years old. I think the average age of a congressman or congresswoman, members of Congress, is around 62. The issues that Congress talks about and the issues that are on elected officials' minds are very different than what younger generations care about. We don't have a voice in DC, and it's a problem because DC matters, policy matters, and yet we're not being represented. You know, climate change is going to affect our homes, our communities, the air we breathe, the water we drink for the next 30 years. It's not going to affect, unfortunately, for the, you know, senator representative who's in their 80s or 90s. Like, that's not the same level of concern. And so when it comes to fixing our schools, when it comes to ensuring that we can hire talent easier, when it comes to ensuring that everyone has jobs and is trained properly for them, DC is not focusing on those issues. And I just want to ensure that everyone has a voice, and we need to fix that representation in DC today. So it's time for fresh leadership. It's time for next generation. This is the first time this seat here has been open without an incumbent in 30 years. So people are interested in putting in someone in power who is willing to make change, who's willing to stand up and stand out. And I'm the person who brings the vision, brings the policy background, and brings the will to get stuff done for younger generations and those, you know, under 50 years old. The majority of people who live here who just haven't had a representative voice in DC.
And when you say the importance of fresh leadership in Silicon Valley, could you elaborate on what you mean by that and when it comes to breaking and making things?
Yeah, I think Silicon Valley, it's a special place where this is where it's okay to like move fast and break things. It's okay to innovate. People in this district like to see young upstarts who want to make a difference, want to improve the world, and are passionate in nature. We are open to change. We want to see change, and we've seen the benefit of change over years. I think there's a George Bernard Shaw quote that I always go back to, and it's something along the lines, it's like, the reasonable person adopts to the world. The unreasonable person attempts to make the world adopt to them. Therefore, all progress in the world is made by unreasonable people. And it's like, Silicon Valley kind of really has always represented that to me. Like, people are willing to think outside the box, people who aren't stuck in their ways, people who want to be creative, want to see change, are willing to fight for that change. That's what this district has continued to, you know, whether it's VC investors or just word on the street, like, that's what we represent. That's what we get excited about. The up and coming founders, the leaders of this world. It's not just the armchair quarterbacks. It's the real doers. And I think it's time for, you know, this district to be able to elect someone who's a young doer, who has the grit to get stuff done and has the experience to make it happen.
As previously mentioned, your background includes experience in investing firms and as a startup founder. How do you think this experience, in your viewpoint, prepares you for public office and addressing the needs of entrepreneurs and small businesses in your district?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think coming from an investor and a business background, I really have that analytical and rigorous mindset that I bring to all problems. And I think that's what really needs to be brought to DC. Some people will say I'm like stubborn, but I think that stubbornness means that like I need to be convinced by the numbers. I'm not someone who's convinced by emotions. I'm also not someone who falls prey to pressure of like, oh, this is what we should be doing. I know that I need to see the numbers. I want to see the proof. I want to ensure that it's best for Silicon Valley and best for this country. And if, as someone who is always thoughtful and always considerate, that works really well in investing. And I think it works well in policy and getting stuff done as well. To be a good investor, you need to always be willing to cross all your T's and dot all your I's. You have to read through all the 10,000 pages of notes and really find, you know, what's the core thesis? Where's your edge? How can you make a difference? And the same is true for policy. You know, the way that I think an investment firm works of, oh, you know, we collecting this money from our shareholders or from other institutions that we're going to go out there and pick the best stocks or pick the best startups to invest in. You're really trying to optimize your portfolio. And politicians should be doing that every single day as well. We pay a hell of a lot of money in taxes here in this district, and we want to ensure that those taxes are going to the best use possible. You know, the best allocation of that capital should be in investments that are going to make America better and have the highest ROI. And too often, policymakers aren't talking about ROI. They're oftentimes focused on emotions. And yes, that sells better. That sells better in terms of, you know, like getting votes and really like kind of mobilizing your base. But this is a place where like we reward investors, we reward people who are smart. And, you know, I'm someone who's very focused on having policies that have bipartisan support, are market-based, and stuff that has very high ROI that's been proven by consistent academic research. I've done a lot of academic research in the past at Dartmouth College and at Stanford University on policy and on climate issues, and am focused on getting things done that moves the needle and has a high ROI impact. And I think really focusing on the ROI, being able to come in and question what works, you know, does the status quo how it should be willing to change it, and then come prepared with ideas and with policy proposals of stuff that will make a difference, can get passed, and will ensure that we can, you know, create a better environment, a better climate, ensure that more immigrants can come to America who want to pursue the American dream and build the society and create jobs here, and really ensure that all children, you know, no matter what zip code they're born in, have the same equal opportunity, and really kind of focusing on ROI and not just on emotions is what I do. And I know it makes a difference in business. It makes a difference in investing, and it sure as hell makes a difference in DC and in politics too.
As being an investor, you emphasize the impact of climate change and technology on startups and policy development. Could you explain how these two areas intersect and why they are crucial for the future of your district?
I've spent kind of a good portion of my career, almost all of it, really focused on like climate investing and sustainability. I have worked in climate investing at institutional asset management level, at growth equity level, and as well as venture capital. And I've also been working in climate policy in three different states too. And it is very apparent to me that there are a ton of exciting climate investment opportunities out there with hundreds of startups that are becoming late stage companies and even public companies today. But if we really want to encourage and incentivize the entire ecosystem, policy matters a lot more than it should. And it's not the fact that, like, I think too often people think there's this like trade-off where, oh, we need policy, like the government needs to give them money to make it work. And like, that is not true. And I'm not a believer that, oh, the government should be handing out handouts to give everyone free electric vehicles. It's like, no, electric vehicles work because they're cheaper. They save people money. They save the planet. There's less smog. They're more enjoyable to drive. And they have a huge impact on the planet. And it's ensuring that companies that are, you know, building electric vehicles, too often they're running into policy roadblocks. And it's the fact that the government has sort of set up issues inadvertently that are really slowing down progress. So we're seeing that a ton today with, you know, one example is on electric trucks. To get an electric charger set up, you oftentimes need to get a local approval as well as the utilities approval. And that can take years. And we don't have years to waste. Like, we have 5 to 10 years to really start charting a new course for this country in climate policy and make large differences. And if we're going to be slowed down because of stuff like that, it's going to be a problem. If you want to build a wind farm today in this country, on average, it takes 4.2 years. It's going up every single day. And that's from after you've done all the permitting, gotten, you know, everything set up. There's the processing of getting government approval and utility approval is taking over 4 years. So you haven't even started building yet. You haven't even, you know, started all the engineering, but yet just to like kind of get the early approval stage, it's taking too long. And so in order to really crowd in and continue to have more private investment, we need to ensure that the government is setting up markets that are fair and that are especially that are efficient and just, so that we can actually create a climate economy and transform our future to be, you know, carbon neutral. And we can't do that if the government can't get out of its own way. And so it's very important that I've just seen from years in climate investing that too often it's the government that's been slowing stuff down, that somehow discouraged stuff or had disincentives that have led to a lot of slowness and pain in the process. And a lot of my policies are clearly focused on taking out these inefficiencies to really ensure that we can create a future economy that works for a green transition. And it works to ensure that we have a better climate and a better environment for all in this country.
And how can policy decisions affect the investment landscape and the success of businesses from your perspective? I just want to dive a bit deeper into that, Joby.
Yeah, yeah. I think government's job is to fix market failures when they're occurring. So I don't think it's really government's job to like create a market itself. I really rely like on the private sector. Business leaders are smart. Founders of like NGOs are smart. Business can solve a lot of problems. Like, this is Silicon Valley. Startups have solved a lot of the problems we face. I really think the government comes in when it comes to really helping ensure that we can cut red tape, really ensure that we can, you know, put incentives and make tax policy align with better outcomes. And so whether that's, you know, stuff through the Inflation Reduction Act at giving tax credits to individuals who install a heat pump and take out their old HVAC systems. Heat pumps, you know, use 50% less electricity. They can save 2 to 4 times amount in emissions. And most individuals, when you say like, oh, you should go install a heat pump, and I start talking to people around here, no one has any clue what a heat pump even is. When you say, oh, it's just like a more efficient AC or heating system, they're like, oh, I get that. That makes sense. I'm like, oh, you know, it's going to save you money. It has a fast payback period. You can actually get about $2,000 from the government if you go and install one today. People aren't aware of this. And so it really creates a huge investment opportunity for the future of heat pump technology, for the future of people who are trying to build the workforce, for the software that comes behind it. And there's this like huge climate opportunity, but too often government hasn't done a good enough job about ensuring that the public knows about it, ensuring that if people apply for these tax credits, it's easy to actually process it. And so it's both that like educational and processing part where we can really make a difference. And I think that really allows like these startups to enter a growth phase much faster and really kind of accelerate their transition and accelerate their go-to-market and improve their product market fit if the government can really help grease the wheels. And so that's the stuff that really gets me excited that people aren't talking enough about, is how really the government can really grease the wheels for the private sector to take off in climate tech. And there's a ton of opportunity. And I get excited talking about this stuff because I know there's easy things we can get done that will make a difference today if someone was just a leader in this district who could really fight for it and make a difference.
So Joby, earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that you need younger people in office. What unique perspectives or qualities do you believe younger individuals bring, and how can they contribute to more effective governance?
Yeah, I think having younger generations in office is extremely important. A, enough research has just shown that younger people are more creative, more open to new ideas, more thoughtful, just as individuals age, you just become more biased to being like stuck in your ways, unwilling to listen to new ideas, and kind of moved, you know, lean more towards a like conservative approach. And I think young people are really willing to stand up for what they believe in. They're willing to fight. They're willing to know that they can make a difference, and they believe that they can, and they really can. If you put your mind to it, it's amazing what stuff can get done. And so I think bringing that perspective, like I always encourage other young people to run for office, take risks. Too often, I don't think like really like focus on asymmetric risks. And that's like the same thing in investing as well. It's like your downside can be limited, but your upside is huge when it comes to investing in a stock. Like you can only lose the $100 you put into buying it. But if you bought Facebook or Amazon early on, you know, you doubled, tripled, quadrupled, quintupled, you know, 100 times your money very fast. And so I think young people really have that perspective of willing to take those asymmetric risks, willing to try things, and willing to think outside the box and be creative. And it's like very evident in this race. If you look at me versus the other candidates, look at their websites. They don't talk about policy. They don't talk about how they're going to change, how they're actually going to make changes. They don't talk about how they're going to focus on younger voters too often. And the problem is that there's a strategic reason why they do this, is that young people don't vote. They aren't as politically engaged. And if you, most political strategists will be like, oh, focus on the older voters. They're the ones who are going to show up. And part of my message is really ensuring that younger people know that their voice can be heard, their voice matters, and it is time for them to take action and to vote, to really show that people who are, you know, under 40 years old can make a difference, and their voices should be heard in DC. And so I think it's bringing that like thoughtfulness, that creativity, and that brashness that really makes a difference and drives change. Kind of the last thing I'd say on this point is a lot of people don't know that our founding fathers, we like to think of them as these like old individuals who were very like thoughtful and had decades of experience. But it was like, I'm going to blank on some of the numbers, but like when the Declaration of Independence was signed, you know, Alexander Hamilton was like 21 years old. James Madison was like 18. James Monroe was like in his early 20s. A lot of the early like founding fathers we look up to were quite young people, and they were the ones who were willing to, you know, speak out against their parents, speak out against what other Britain thought and what other people in the nation thought. And that's like the ideals that founded this country. And I don't know why we've moved to a place where now it's like, oh, you have to be in your mid 80s to run for president. Oh, you should be in your 60s when you run for Congress. Like we were founded on a nation of young people. Why that has disappeared, I don't know, but it is time to bring that back.
So Joby, in your view, what are the key actions or initiatives that need to be taken to ensure the prosperity of Silicon Valley in the coming years?
Yeah, I think as I know I've talked about a lot about climate so far, and I do want to focus on education and immigration as well. I think like the greatest assets that occupy like Silicon Valley are the individuals here. We are a nation of immigrants whose like diverse backgrounds have been crucial to the innovation, you know, of this state and this district and this country. You look at all the famous Silicon Valley founders or Fortune 500 CEOs, nearly a majority of them are immigrants themselves. Too often, I think people have this like fear of immigrants taking our jobs. But, you know, I'm someone who's seen so many smart immigrants come here and create jobs and create vibrant communities. And this is like, unfortunately, too rare today. For anyone who's been in college recently or grad school, whether it's from Dartmouth or Stanford, I've watched some of my smartest friends come here from all across the world with dreams of being an American, with dreams of creating a business here, with dreams of establishing a family here, paying taxes, like joining the community. And yet we say, oh, you have 2 to 3 years to work here. Oh, sorry, you didn't get lucky in the lottery for an H-1B visa. Too bad, you have to leave the country today. And it makes no sense. Like we are losing brain power. We are sending talent away from this country. Enough academic research continues to prove and reprove that there are so many positive benefits from retaining talent. And even just going back to the basics, like if you think of GDP growth, one key condition factor of that is labor force growth. So why we aren't talking more about the benefits of immigration is unfortunate to me. I think in California today, we especially have, it's the state that has the most unfilled jobs in the country. We also have the most unfilled high-skilled jobs. And if there are no Americans who are able and willing to, you know, fill these tech jobs, education jobs, healthcare jobs, we should be looking to abroad and trying to fix wait lists of talented individuals in some countries that are, you know, over 50 to 100 years long. You know, if you're applying with a PhD from India, why should we say, oh, it's going to take 50 years to process this? That just doesn't work for anyone. And so I think we really have to ensure that businesses like on our main streets till like Sand Hill Road can hire unfilled jobs and like really ensure that the American dream is a viable path for those who want to make a better America and a stronger America and a smarter America. And on education, ever since I was in fifth grade, like teachers have been inspiring me to aim for my dreams. And unfortunately, I know that this experience isn't shared by many. Our zip code too often determines our educational outcomes, and our parents' wealth should really not determine our ability to attend preschool, which is some of the most important years of development. Part of my platform really focuses on expanding Head Start, ensuring that we can provide free or heavily subsidized pre-K. And the benefits there are evident, whether it's improved parental health and wellness, but also really for the children, focusing on their life outcomes, likelihood of crime, likelihood of dropping out of school, impacts on test scores, impacts of going to college, impacts on mental health. Investments in early education make such a difference. And so focusing there is key. And then also focusing on vocational labor and training and higher education and student debt is also a part that really needs to be addressed. We're seeing many skilled labor parts of our economy, seeing many union jobs and heavily unionized industries that have significant job openings. Right now, there's like 65,000 HVAC worker openings that are going unfilled. If we want to install those heat pumps, we need more HVAC technicians. Whether it's your electricians, your welders, your plumbers, we are falling way short of the needs that we need in order to install kind of the future of climate technologies into our homes and into our businesses. And so we really need the government to be investing in vocational training programs and apprenticeship programs to ensure that we can fill these jobs. I think like too often people put these issues in terms of a trade-off, whereas, oh, like we're going to spend money here and then we're going to lose this. Or like if we do XYZ, it's going to take away from this. But to me, it's like so clear that focusing on these like climate issues, focusing on education and immigration, the ROI is huge where, you know, oh, if we create, spend a little bit of money to create this apprenticeship program, oh, you create 30 more jobs or dozens more jobs very fast. And so it's so worth it for government to get involved and ensure that, you know, we're really creating a better America that works for the next 30 years. And I really think focusing on climate, education, and immigration are the issues that will matter for the next 30, and they're the most consequential. And that's where we need to be focused today to ensure prosperity in Silicon Valley for the next few decades.
So Joby, looking at this from a more macro level, how do you plan to collaborate with existing politicians in Washington to achieve your goals and advocate for the interests of Silicon Valley?
Yeah, I think what differentiates me from all the other candidates is that I'm the only candidate who's worked with both Republicans and Democrats before. I used to work for Senator Portman, who was a Republican senator from Ohio in D.C., and I've worked for many Democrats across many different states. I feel most comfortable when I'm like working across the aisle and collaborating. I think there's progress has been made, such as like the Problem Solvers Caucus in Congress, and something that I plan to join. But I think it's imperative that like every member of Congress should be thinking about how can we work together to get stuff done, not just, oh, waiting until we can get a majority and pass things through. It's too often I find that the discourse is from both parties is kind of focused on, oh, the other party's the enemy. Oh, the other party, you know, is doing this XYZ to us. Like, we need to fight back. And I think it's just that language just kind of leads to the ability, takes away the ability to have discourse. So I'm definitely someone who knows that I can work with anyone, likes, you know, even if I don't agree with them, there's you can almost, like, people are people. You can always find things to agree with, always find some similarities, and oftentimes always find things to work together on. And so really hoping to be the congressman that can actually get a lot of stuff done, even if it's small things that doesn't really hit media attention, it will have a big difference. And I know that, you know, when you talk about climate, like, yes, Democratic voters really are passionate about the environment and about, you know, endangered species and protecting the wilderness. And that might not resonate with Republicans, but when you talk about jobs and infrastructure and growth and all the other benefits, like, it does. And so it's really ensuring that you're framing the message correctly. And it's not like just a persuasion tactic of trying to, you know, get someone on your side without them really being on your side. It's really just speaking the same language, being on their level and treating everyone with respect and trying to work with them and what they care about and what their district cares about. America too often faces all the same problems. And I kind of wish Congress was very thoughtful about, you know, passing laws that worked, you know, for all Americans. I think, like, that's key. And I think it's, like, shocking to me, even as I'm campaigning, you know, when someone at like, you know, go and knock on someone's door, even if they're a Democrat or a Republican, they're like, oh, which party are you? Is their first question. And I'm always like, wait, didn't you want to hear more about, like, who I am, what I stand for, what I plan to do, and then decide if that resonates or doesn't resonate with you? I think it's kind of sad to see how, like, identity politics has too often taken over our lives and our country. And I really want to bring back discourse, bring back people being open and willing to talk about the issues, think about them, and make policy that works for all. So knowing that I've worked across the aisle many times before, I'm comfortable doing it. I know that I'm the candidate who can get stuff done, and I'm excited to get to work.
And Joby, for our last and final question, what advice do you have for your voters out there as they prepare for this?
Yeah, great final question. Too often, I think people, like, when you look at turnouts in primary elections, it's just sad. You see maybe 30% max coming out to vote. So 70% of people who have a chance to have a voice just decide not to. And those decisions matter. And I think, going back to what I said earlier, too often people are like, oh, if it's going to be a Democrat in office, that's okay. I'm a Democrat. You know, I don't need to pick the Democrat. But it's, you really do. There is a ton of nuance between each of the candidates who are running. We're each running on different platforms and plan to do different things in office. And I would ask that everyone, like, does their research and then gets out there to vote. What is beautiful about the California primary system is that it is open to everyone. So you do not need to be a Democrat to vote for a Democrat. You show up on March 5th and you get a chance to place your vote, or you can vote by mail when it's coming out on February 5th. And I would just invite everyone to think about the difference that they can make with their vote. Think about how easy it is and know that, like, their voice matters and it's time for their voice to be heard. The second thing I say is, hopefully this message and this conversation we've had so far has resonated with a lot of people. And kind of, no matter where you live in the country, you can support my race. Any donation amount matters. We are very different from other campaigns in this race, in that I have a majority of donors who are under the age of 35. Majority are actually first-time donors. Really seeing the average being around, like, $50, the median's around $50, you know, per donor. You know, it looks very different than other classic establishment candidates, and it's exciting. And that's where the momentum is coming from for this race, and what gets me excited to get to work on this every single day. But I think I do want to resonate that any donation like makes a difference. You know, a single dollar allows us to send out, you know, three more pieces of mail. It allows us to put a funny ad out there to about, you know, 30 different people. And so just don't worry about, you know, the amount that you give. Know that like it makes a difference. And like that's a way to actually like show your voice as well. So do your research, be thoughtful, but going out there to vote and giving any amount really makes a difference. And then lastly, please reach out to me. My website's jobyforcongress.com. That's J-O-B-Y-F-O-R and then congress.com. Learn more about it. My email's on there. Reach out. I'd love to talk to you and look forward to continuing the conversation.
Joby, it was a pleasure having you on Geeks of the Valley this morning. And thank you so much for joining us from Silicon Valley.
Thanks for having me on the podcast. It was a blast. I appreciate it.